into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Now, you're welcome back. So it's the Mayo section of our All-Ireland Football Final Preview Chat. We are here, as ever, with thanks to Super Value and as part of their Support Where You're From campaign, a really nice initiative. They've been working with primary schools across Dublin and Mayo, as well as in Crumlin Children's Hospital, to create artwork, which will be on display at Croke Park this weekend for the All-Ireland Football Final, which is a really nice touch. So we have had Paul Flynn and Bernard Brogan. You can watch that on all of our social channels. It's now time to get the Mayo side of the story. We can bring in Barry Moran. Barry Moran's played in 4 finals, part of the squad for 5, retired in 2018. Also 2 All-Ireland club finals with Castlebar. Lost them both, unfortunately, against Vincent's and Ballyboden. The Dubs strike again. And we have Stephen Rochford, who, of course, took Mayo to All-Ireland finals in 16 and 17. You're both very welcome. Barry, Stephen, how you doing?
How you doing, Joe?
How you, Joe?
You were having a chat there before we got started. Lots to reminisce about.
I was just asking Stephen what he doesn't want me to say about him, and he kind of cleared the record. So we're good to go, I think, Stephen, are we?
Yeah, well, look, it's a dangerous game you could play, Barry.
Big Bird. I didn't realise the nickname was Big Bird. So you learn something every day.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that goes a while back. So known as Big Bird or Bird in the squad. Something that just kind of stuck from way back earlier on in my career, and ever since I'm known as that. So yeah, you'll hear that a bit among my friends, Bird or Big Bird. Yeah.
Okay. What kind of character around the squad was Barry, Stephen?
Very quiet, very shy. It's really cool to get him out of himself. You know, I know he was. In fairness, he was a big presence. Obviously, a big physical presence at 6'5". But he was a big character and offered a lot of support. And all he didn't injury wise. And as you said, there, my first season. Would have been unavailable for the National League, but Mitchell's getting to the National League final. But was always very good and very supportive to row in behind as a squad player. And you know, with over those couple of years, when the seasons are long, it could be a 5-minute, it could be a 10-minute role, it could be a start. And in fairness, he never let us down when he came off the bench. So a valuable member. And I think, you know, when you look at it, if you want long seasons, you need to have big, strong squads. So definitely a valuable squad player.
Yeah, because I was having a look, Barry. So 2012, you started in midfield alongside Aidan O'Shea in that Donegal match. 2013, on as a sub against the Dubs. 16, a sub in the drone game, a sub in the replay. 2017, unused sub. It's the unglamorous role that managers and your fellow players absolutely and genuinely value massively. But of course, I'm sure you'd like to be starting a bit more. How did you balance, you know, striving to be the best you could be without being, you know, too disappointed when you're not getting the nod?
Yeah, look, I suppose I started off in 12 and was starting that season, and then into 13, picked up an injury, and Seamus O'Shea got in ahead of me, and then I, you know, found it hard to get back into it. And then you had Tom Parsons, and we were lucky in Mayo, I suppose, around the middle. We had Aidan, myself, Tom Parsons, Jason Gibbons, Seamus O'Shea, all these kind of guys that you could throw into any game. So the competition was very high, and you look, you pick up an injury or a knock and you're back, and then I suppose the main thing was just to be very, very positive and accept your role and responsibility. And we had Bernard and Paul on previously going through the roles and responsibilities and the Dublin setup and the characters and all that kind of thing. It was the exact same in Mayo. And I suppose it was a common cause, the common goal. And if that meant that you were a role player and you had to be on the bench, that means that was it. You had to accept it. It was all about us going in the one direction. And I think Stephen will confirm that. That's the one good, great thing about the squads I was involved in, and most definitely this squad, is I don't think there's any egos looking for their own thing. It's 26, 36 lads just going at it, not about the ego themselves, but about, you know, going after Sam Maguire and trying to get there. And I think that's a great attribute that these Mayo teams have had over the last number of years.
So, Stephen, another All-Ireland final for Mayo. there is a pent up magic waiting to explode if and when the day comes. You know, Kevin McStay was writing about it even during the week, very vividly about all these finals and about the various players and managers who've, you know, done so much to try and get over the line. The mood in the county during COVID times obviously going to be a bit different, but there must be that sense of cautious hope. I wouldn't suspect as much hype this year because of COVID, and also because, you know, there is a sense this Mayo team are maybe here a little bit ahead of schedule.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, you say if, like, you know, I have no doubts that Mayo will win in All-Ireland. It's part of what I think Kevin wrote about it around. That's what why you keep going. Will it be this year? Hopefully it will. I think, yeah, it has been, like, it's a totally different environment. The occasion of the All-Ireland final will be like nothing we've ever seen or experienced before. There isn't as much of the social aspect obviously happening, so there isn't as many of the conversations or the local pre-match gigs happening. Probably this show would have been happening maybe in a Mayo location and in a Dublin location, and that would help drive its own sense of chat about it, and that obviously isn't on the table. And then, you know, the short run in between semi-final and final in December is also another factor. But I think certainly as you engage with people, be it at the filling station or going into a shop, invariably the conversation goes up, well, how do you think Saturday will go and what do you think? And I think there's an element of the cautious optimism, and in that it's like everybody knows what Dublin are going to bring to the party. Everybody, I think, appreciates that it has to be a really top class performance from Mayo, and with a bit of luck thrown in, you know, they may come just down. Sport is a strange thing, so you know, we have fingers and toes and all sorts crossed that the boys can put in the right level of performance and just put yourself in a position to try and go and win the game.
To have a brief glance at the past, Stephen, 16 and 17, obviously you brought Mayo to All-Ireland finals, and you guys hit a standard of performance there that would have won All-Irelands in so many other years. I mean, they were phenomenal games. Paul and Bernard on just before you guys were, you know, saying for them, it was the Mayo rivalry. That was the key rivalry in their career. And they regard Mayo as a great team, a team to rival any era, you know, a great team, even if you didn't get over the line. So 16-17, what was, you know, when you looked at Dublin then, where did you see gaps, weaknesses? Weakness is probably the wrong word, but areas where you could get on top of them. What was your general approach to trying to beat that, you know, those Dublin teams in 16-17, if you had to kind of boil it down? Because I know we're talking different sets of players slightly in either year in different circumstances, but you did a lot of analysis on that Dublin team. How did you try and stop them?
Yeah, I can remember that before both finals, I think we beat Tipperary in 16, and then we beat Kerry in 17. I think the following Tuesday night, management met in Athlone. We used to get a hotel room 4 or 5 hours and plan out a sense of what the Dublin team was going to be. We didn't over focus on matchups. I think people get too wound up in matchups, because there's only a certain aspect of that, Joe, you can control. So, but we go about trying to lay out what were the 3 or 4 things that we could look to control or influence. You can't necessarily control all of it, but what could we influence? Could we do something on, obviously, again, the kickouts elements becomes sort of the chat, what the shape needs to be. And then closer to the time, you know, when the team takes shape, you know, what's the impact from the bench? What can that play out? So, matchups, you know, primary possession, they were the two main things, and it was as much about probably matching Dublin. It's sort of in similar type of outlook to the game, and you knew you had to play them on the front foot. It wasn't a case of there was never a discussion around playing a defensive way. I think I heard the lads talking about a little bit around game management. I think, yeah, we would have spoken a little about that. And certainly, you know, it's funny when you hear about the boys talking, Bernard and Paul, talking about them tracking the half back line from Mayo. Those similar conversations were happening when you've got Jack McCaffrey and you've got James McCarthy and these guys coming from deep. They were the same conversations that we were having in our setup.
Mm. I mean, 16 is dominated by a couple of things. The two on goals is just insane. I mean, how will we ever see two on goals in a match again? I can't remember if I've ever seen two on goals aside from that day. You know, so some odd things can happen. And that was the drawn game. And then, of course, the Henley-Clark situation looms large in the replay where you go for Henley, longer kick out. Dublin got on top of the kick outs in the first game. I mean, I felt the criticism of you there was a touch over the top. Hindsight is everything. Unless someone was saying at pre-game that it was a crazy decision, fair enough. But I didn't hear many people saying it was that crazy pre-game. Big call, sure. But obviously, you know, goalkeeper mistakes are magnified. Give us your thoughts on all that. I'm sure Mayo fans, when you see them at the filling station, if they have enough courage, they'll mumble something out to you about that.
He's 16 is such a distant memory. You're hoping in those situations for them. But like, I think when you look at 16, you look at the first game, a real sense for us was to create sort of chaos. Don't give Dublin sort of any comfort on the ball. We knew that they had quality, and if you give them that space. And I think if you can remember, it was that Sunday was a wet. It was a dirty type of day. It wasn't pouring rain, but there was a real skid to the ground. So it was a case of every tackle that guys went into, it seemed like everyone was flying into tackles, and it creates an uneasy, I suppose, maybe sense. And Dublin were definitely in form. We'd had a big win against Tyrone, and whilst we were good in patches against Tipperary, our form wasn't as what we probably would have liked. But I can tell you that the belief that in the group, I remember Barry will tell you this as well, we had a weekend in Limerick in preparation for the game, and coming away that Sunday lunchtime, really felt that the group was buzzing as regards, they just couldn't wait for the week to move on and get into it. And then I suppose in the drawing game, there's huge disappointment in that. I think there's one or two little things. I think Alan Dillon picked up an injury midway through the second half. He came off the bench, he just scored a point. We were just getting on top. He was starting to pick up a breaking ball, that bit of experience, and just an innocuous challenge going in. And he collided, I think it was with Keno Sullivan, and he ended up breaking a bone in his foot. And that obviously impacted him as well for the replay. So if we'd had a fit Alan, I think going into those final couple of minutes, we may have just snuck over the line in the drawing game. But then obviously going into the replay will be for a lot of people around the selection for the goalkeeper. To be honest, Joe, it wasn't for me as big a call. We understood there was going to be a sense that others would make more of it, but it was a selection decision. You know, if we didn't start Shamie or Tom and put in Barry in the middle of the field, there wouldn't have been as much hype. Robbie had played numerous amount of games, had played and started All Ireland finals in the past, so there wasn't as big a decision. Of course, David had a really phenomenal year and goal for us in the championship, but I think if you think in the first day, Dublin probably played below key, and our expectation would be that they would have improved, and that sort of maybe if there was a case that we had surprised them, that element of surprise wouldn't be there, so their performance would increase, and that over the course of the 12 or 13 days, it probably is only down to a week, but by the time you play an All-Ireland final on a Sunday, you recover by the Wednesday. You've only got about two sessions. And I suppose it came down to, you know, did we have enough time to work on the intricacies that we wanted from a kick-out perspective? And in that, we had confidence in both our goalies. We were very, very lucky that we had a squad that was that had two goalies with a lot of experience. And, you know, I suppose I'm I'm sort of in some ways reluctant to talk too much about it, not to protect myself by any means, but to spare the lads, because anybody can make an error.
Of course,
yeah. We make them on the sideline, you make them on the pitch, you live and die by it. And there were two great guys and they gave us options. Sometimes it goes, which I think it's, what it's lost on people is we still only lost that game by a point. Dublin scored 4 points in injury time. We had the last play, Darren Daly makes an almighty block on a ball that was possibly going into either Barry or Aidan, hopefully. And it just doesn't go your way. That's just that's the way sport is sometimes.
Look, it's small margins and it's judgment calls and nobody's perfect. And I respect totally your point about, you know, the two fellas not needing to drag it up again. 4 years on nearly. Is this simple point, and then I want to bring in Barry, sorry, I'm not ignoring you, Barry. This is suddenly seeming very rude here.
He'd know nothing about kick-off.
Is the simple point, was the simple logic as simple as, well, I have two good goalkeepers. David's obviously a brilliant goalkeeper. Robbie can kick the ball that bit further, so it might give us an outlet. Is it that simple?
Well, yeah, plus Rob had a lot of experience and he played in the 2015 semi-final and replay. He'd started the 2014 semi-final and replay against Kerry. So there was a load of experience there. It wasn't somebody that you were that was going in for their championship debut and that. So it was a case that we felt we were fortunate to have two experienced guys. You know, we knew that it was a case that having had that experience, there was also relationships built with players out the field. And for us, it wasn't as big a gamble. And I suppose, you know, Joe, my thing, my role as the manager is that if I have seen something before the game, and if that becomes a factor after the game, we lose. For me, that's a bigger thing to hold than having been informed about something going in and doing nothing about it. Why? Because the media or somebody would start writing or talking about it. I think I would be doing the group a disservice if I didn't look to address it. And look, if we had 3 weeks or a bit longer, we may have looked at doing things within the training sessions, but we felt we just didn't have the time with what we were presented with. So, that won't sit well with everybody, but that's the reality.
Mm. So, Barry, all these finals and the whole county very much behind you. You know, I remember listening to a couple of the 06 team that day when Kerry blew you out of the water. I think you were involved for part of that game. And a couple of the lads talked about just the embarrassment of coming home. Oh, my God. You know, everyone's travelled up. Everyone's spent money. People have flown in from all around the world. And that's, you know, what we coughed up after a few minutes. You fast forward to this decade, which has just ended. It's hard to think of a team who have more of a bond with their fans. You know, it's something special. And it's fans all around the world and all around the country. That, you know, that's the nature of the county. Emigration has been a part of the story. And you've all emerged with so much credit from these finals, these epics. You know, Bernard and Paul made that point as well. So try if you can. It's a difficult kind of thing to try and sum up. But the bond with the fans, those overseas, within the county, you know, the emotion that seems to go with Mayo in these All-Ireland final days, there's a lot going on. And obviously, as a player, you're in the eye of it.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you're coming up to All-Irelands, like, Mayo is sports mad and it's football mad. So it's a religion here. It really is. I think you always have to take into the account as well that we're on the West Coast. So we have a lot of immigration. We have guys that are working all over the place, but they always have this bond to come back home. You add in the fact that we've had the famine for the last couple of years, as in we just haven't got over the line. It just becomes more and more of an obsession around it. Mm. But the Mayo fans are unbelievable. Like, you'll ask at some stage about some of the memories around, you know, the career or what you remember. Some of the best memories we had were training camps. And I've been lucky enough to be involved with Mayo for years. And we've gone to Spain and Portugal. We've gone to New York. We've gone to Chicago. We've gone to all these beautiful places and great places. But some of the memories that stick out the most were among our own. So I remember certain years we did it in Belmullet. We did days up in Achill with Stephen and James Horan as well. You know, and they were the days where we were among our own and looked after our own. Like, I remember the time for, just to give you an example, we did a training camp, I think, over 4 days, and we did it up in Belmullet. And we were absolutely treated like kings. We were allowed to go up there. We were allowed to train, do what we wanted. We were looked after. So there is that bond, I suppose, with the fans. But to your point, after the game and when the results don't go your way, it can get a bit personal, you know. You have best friends that are coming back, you've got relations that are flying back in. Like for every All Ireland, we used to go into a bubble. Like quite literally, the players will go into a bubble away from everything, which will be great. But outside of that, when you come outside of the bubble and you look, like looking back, I used to have cousins coming over from New York, best friends that would fly back from Australia, even for the club finals, they would come back. And then when you meet them afterwards and it doesn't go your way, you know, it can be a bit personal and raw. But overall, I think just our fans are unbelievable, and we're lucky to have that bond. And, you know, I think you'll see that, you know, we could have an FBD game round one on the 5th of January and it's snowing. We could have 4,000 or 5,000 fans in McHale Park. Like, that's no exaggeration. So it's just sports, man. And we're very lucky to have that bond. I think, you know, it drives the best out of us. I think it does. Like when you're 2 or 3 points down and you need some support and you've got half a Croke Park from Mayo roaring you on, it does add. But I'm sure the lads just want to get over the line for themselves and for also the fans and the Mayo people as well. So, you know, there is that balance among it.
Yeah, for sure. That aspect, you know, you mentioned the crowd, and they would be flying in from all around the world as well as travelling up from Mayo. One of them is with us now from Canada, I hope, if the technology allows us. Kevin Kilbane, can you hear us? Hello.
Hi, Joe. How are you keeping?
Ah, great. How you doing? How's things?
I'm very good. Very good. How are you keeping? Looking well.
Hey, listen, back at you. We just flashed up a photo there of you and Stephen Rochford arm in arm wearing your matching shirts from your interview a couple of years ago.
Yeah, Stephen looked a lot better than I did that day, I think, yeah.
Two for one. So, geez, I mean, a weird one for you. You've loved going to the All-Irelands the last couple of years. There are hundreds, probably thousands, frankly, like you, who would be flying into Dublin Airport this week, all things going well. So it's that strange, almost isolated experience watching on your couch for you this year.
Yeah, it has been strange watching a lot of the games because, as you know, the last 3 or 4 years, especially watching most of the league games, of course, the championship along the way as well. So it's a strange experience for me and for many other Mayo supporters over the years, but that it has been, sorry, over the years. So it's the way that it is. Mm. We know where we are. It's actually been quite good sitting back, taking that little bit of time just to maybe without that nervousness around the games, because you'll know yourself, whenever I've come back, wherever it's been, I remember some of the games over the years, every game seems to have a little bit of nervousness around them. And no matter who it is you've played against, because every side, whichever team Mayo's come up against, they always seem to think they've got a chance of beating them. And now all of a sudden we're the underdogs, and it's going to be a good experience this weekend, I think, to watch the team, to see how they shape up against Dublin. Yeah.
I was very struck by just how much Mayo meant to you, actually, as we got to know each other over the last couple of years. Obviously, you know, your father travelled over and made his life in the UK. But, geez, I mean, you can really sense how much Mayo means to you. You count yourself as a honorary Mayo man very much, you know, Mayo man through and through. And I think the football, and I don't want to speak for you, it's a question as much as a statement. I think the football has been one way that you and probably lots of people in your situation, it's allowed you to bond with the county again, get a feel for the county, stay in touch with the county. You know, it's been a wonderful thing, I think, for Mayo people abroad to almost connect with what, you know, what's in their blood.
Yeah, absolutely it has. Yeah, you know, of course, my father died 5 years ago, 4 days ago. So it was, you know, he was born in 1951. We know the significance of the year as well. He'd never seen Mayo win an All-Ireland himself, and it was something that he wanted his whole life, and we never got the chance to of course have it. But yeah, I think it has been great for me, certainly in the last, say, whatever, seven, eight years or so since I finished playing, to be able to go back, see family, go to Castlebar, watch the games, and then travel to wherever we're going to see various family and spend the night with them. I think that's I'm no different from so many other lads that would have been born in England, that would have been brought up, you know, heading west in the summertime. And that's where all my family are. So that's been doubly special, I think. Having that experience over the last few years, especially getting back to see so much of my family on the west of Ireland, yeah.
Mm. I know your time with us is slightly tight, and I'll get back to Stephen and Barry in a moment. Cautious optimism was the phrase we were using earlier on before you came on. It does feel like this is in so much as it can ever be for Mayo or any team in an All-Ireland final, and the players will hate this because they're winners and they want to win it, but it does feel like a, you know, not too much pressure on them free shot at Dublin this year, Kev. I don't know what your sense of it is.
I don't know about the lack of pressure being on the team, because I think there's always a lot of pressure that will be put on that team simply because of the expectations and the history that goes around Mayo playing All Ireland finals. So I think the pressure will certainly be on them. But we know that this Dublin side have been so dominant over the last few years and they're so difficult to play against. They've got so much talent throughout that side, throughout the squad. So I think it is going to be difficult for them. Of course, it's going to be difficult for them. But I don't get the feeling of you can be relaxed. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think there will be that tension. And I think that, personally, I think that has to be there, because if there's not that tension there going into the game and that little bit of nervousness because it is an All-Ireland final, I think it'd be a different approach mentally for those players if that was to be the case. So, no, I don't really get that. I think many observers looking in, like us all looking in, will always think, well, nothing to lose. You know, Dublin should win the game because of the players that they've got and things like that. But that doesn't take away the fact is that so many of that team will believe that they can go and win it. And, you know, Stephen's been part of it. Barry's been part of it so often. I'm sure you can ask them the same question. I'm sure that the belief will be right up there with right up at the very top of in their heads. And I don't see any different this year.
So, I mean, I wonder what happens if they win. Are you going to have to break COVID guidelines and fly straight into Knock Airport?
There's no flights. That's the thing. Anyway, I couldn't get back as it is. So we might have to find a way via Iceland or something like that. I don't know. I don't know how we could do it. Row a boat.
Well, listen, I know you got to run. So I guess you'll be watching the game on Saturday. What will it be? Kind of lunchtime territory for you?
No, it's 5 hours. So it'd be about 10:30, I think, won't it? Yeah.
Okay.
10:30 in the morning. So I'll be up. You know, last few weeks has been good. GAA go, you have it. It's a great service. So it's been nice to watch. Yeah.
Okay, good man. Well, I tell you what, if they win, we'll most certainly check in next week and you can scream down the line to us.
Yeah, you might be able to pick my eyes up off the floor then. So, yeah.
All right. Hey, listen, good to talk to you again.
Cheers, Joel. Take it easy. All the best.
Kevin Kilbane there, checking in from Canada. Stephen, what was it like for you, you know, in those 3 years, all the, you know, the emotional side of things? Because James Horan even has talked about the lack of crowd this weekend and through the championship. And, you know, I get the distinct impression he's kind of okay with it. You know, a sense of anxiety sometimes in the crowd was something he talked about, and you can get maybe a more even performance in some ways without it. But as that figurehead, you know, the bus into Croke Park, the people coming up to you, when you are the main man making all of those decisions, how did you find that responsibility? And I guess it's an honour in many ways.
Yeah, it's an absolute privilege, you know, to be able to, you know, not to sound cliched or corny about it, but leading your own people, it's an absolute privilege. And some of the best memories for me is driving down to Intra Drumcondra on those Saturdays, Sundays, beautiful summers, days and evenings, and possibly, you know, just pulling into the back of the QZ stand where it turns in from road to laneway, and you're always wondering how does the bus driver not take the mirror off the bus there, and you might see somebody who was in your class in school, you haven't seen them for 15, 20, 25 years, and they're there in their old Jennifer jersey or you know, a jersey that they had from 2005 when Barry was making his debut. So they're great days, you know. Not everything went our way out on the grass, but Barry touched on something there about the crowd, and there's a lot said about the weight of expectation with the crowd, and when there's an error made and there's the groan from the crowd, and yes, that's there, but when you're 3 or 4 points down and next thing Boyler or Tom Parsons or someone breaks through and they shoot, and that lifts, it's like scoring 2 points. Mm. And that energy that you get from the score, but also from the crowd, is really, really sort of energizing, comforting, sort of, listen, we're back, and you'll get the Mayo chant coming from it. There's a lot of positives to it as well. And when the Mayo crowd are shouting, it means that the Hill are quiet. So there's the pros and cons to it.
Mm. 17 was the year I really thought she had it for a certain period of that game. Just felt as in control as you could ever be against Dublin. What, Stephen, of 16, the two games, and like, geez, two on goals, and as you said in the replay, only a point in it, and then 17, there's GPSs flying as as Dean Rock kicks the point, you know. So we're talking finest of margins. When did you, what do you feel is the closest you came, or was the great missed opportunity, or was there even a, be honest with us here, was there ever a moment in any of the games where for a brief second you thought to yourself, I think we might have this?
No, really, because I tell you, like, you're just caught in the middle of it, and something that'd be very, as best you can, you know, to try and probably step back, and, you know, maybe some people with more experience were able to do that. But no, like, I mean, you're playing, you know, the finest team of certainly our generation. And at no time did I feel in the 17, yes, we had a bit of momentum and we were playing really well. Mm. And probably I think the 17 was a better performance than what we had in the 16. The 16 drawn game, you know, when you keep Dublin to a point in the first half, you can see two own goals, you probably feel that we created enough havoc to sort of make things uncomfortable. And, you know, we probably feel that at certain times we probably could have gone in at halftime in both those games with a better margin. I think in 17 we missed a free, just a scoreable free just before half time, and then we got a dubious free against us just before half time, and Dean Rock kicks it over from about 45 in front of the goal, and that 3-point swing in a tight game can be, you know, doesn't, they're tight margins, and so you can find yourself trying to pick loads of different things, but, you know, at the same time you just move on, and that's what the players do as well. Otherwise, that, you know, they wouldn't have come back with last year's National League success and semi-final and where they find themselves now. So you got to move on. You can't labour the thoughts.
Barry, for the likes of you and Andy Moore, and you know, in the same way that Liam McHale has to park 96, you have to make peace with the fact that you never got over the line. Has that been easy to do?
Yeah, I think it has. Look, you draw a line under the sand and you move on. Life moves on. But it was kind of funny when you introduced myself and Stephen compared to when you introduced Bernard and Paul. You could have added a few more lines. Come on. Sorry. No, but you know, it's times like that when you go, oh God, yeah, look at that. There is such a difference. But look, you draw a line under the sand. You look back and we're talking about it. We had our chances, probably didn't take it. To Stephen's point, I think 16 and 17, you know, I think definitely we could have taken those ones if we were just a small bit better and cuter.
And is that, do you use those words deliberately, better and cuter, as opposed to unlucky?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I do. And I think most people in Mayo will as well. I'll tell you why, because you just got to be better to beat the Dubs. They're that good. They are the team of this generation and probably the best team. There's no denying that. No matter what people say, they're probably the best team we'll ever see. So if you're going to beat them, you got to be better than them, and you got to take your chances. You got to be smarter and you got to be cuter. And I think especially the first game in 16, you know, the two own goals didn't go, you know, went against us, obviously. But Dublin, you heard Paul and Bernard saying, yeah, they probably didn't play that well that day. I think that's probably the biggest one I would say that got away. We were going well, bit of, you know, unfortunate. We had our chances, didn't take it, but you draw the line under the sand. And I think we were laughing here with Bernard and Paul. There was a bit of interference on the line prior to coming online. I just said to them, that's all the medals in the pockets, lads. Moving around, stop moving around. So you just draw a line under the sand. And we hope as former players that on Saturday, you know, we're the ones that if we can are social distancing, we're congratulating the lads on Sunday with the win. And that's what you do. You pass the baton on and you hope that it's not too long until we get the win.
And Barry, is it any consolation? And I mean this, like I really stress this with the absolute utmost of respect to the 96-97 team and the 04-06 team. Brilliant teams, brilliant players. Like, so I really do, I want to stress that. But is it any consolation that this Mayo team that you've played on and the team that, you know, Stephen managed and James Horne has managed, is it a consolation that that group are regarded as one of the great GAA teams? Or does that almost rankle with you as like, ugh, no?
Yeah, it rankles a small bit because, you know, you're always going to be measured whether you like it or not, whether you have a Celtic cross, and we don't have a Celtic cross. Yeah, we came up against the Dublin team of now and the last number of years who were absolutely outstanding, but it would be nice to do it. And also, I think it's a disservice to the 96, sure, 97 teams and 04 and 06. Like, I remember as a young fella, the 96 and the 97 games, like, they came out of nowhere, you know, for that time. They were absolutely brilliant. Some of the players that went on, they're legends around Mayo. So we got to be respectful to them as well, and respectful to the guys in 04 and 06, because you look at the Kerry team that they came up against, you know. So, no, I don't think anyone really buys into that here as an ex-player, whether we were the greatest or not. But I suppose it's a small bit flattering for people to say that. But, you know, at the end of the day, we didn't win anything. We tried our best. We gave it us all. We hope we represented Mayo proudly. And look, we passed the baton on, and we look, and, you know, we're praying that the lads do it on Saturday. Because I think, like, Saturday could be, I'm using the word could because we just don't know. But, you know, there's a team that 6 months ago you wouldn't have written down on paper. These new lads that James have brought in, they have no fear. They have no history behind them in the sense that they've lost us or any of that. They won't care about any of this. They're probably just itching to get out there in Croke Park with or without a crowd and just go at the Dubs.
Yeah.
So I think it's a great opportunity for Mayo, and let's see what happens on Saturday.
Yeah, well, we're going to preview that game in a bit more detail with you later on. Stephen, same question to you about 16 and 17. I mean, I'm not saying obsessing every day, all day, but does it pop into your head still? Have you made peace with it?
My own outlook on a lot of things anyway is like you try and take learnings from these things, and you try and bring it on to the next team. So with the Donegal lads now, there's stuff that sort of you learn in those games, you try and bring it into that setting. Look, it's disappointing. It's a fact of history. You can't do anything about it. It's a case that, you know, we went out there and we did our best. It wasn't good enough. I think Barry's hit the nail on the head that, you know, you got to be better to win those finals. Mm-hmm. And you can build an argument about being unlucky, but, you know, the really great teams make their own luck, and that's what you're going to. But you know when you talk about Mayo and you talk about them, it turns into a bit of a sad story. Look, there's been a lot of great days, and you know,
correct.
I think when you said about the bus and that, it reminded me of the story, and I know it's in your preview reels that you do, but it's the David Brady story of the Jimmy McGuinness coming to Limerick. In the preview or in the run-up for the All-Ireland final in 17.
Remind us, because, I mean, like, was, nothing David Brady says can be taken as fact, so, I mean, we might there's very few discrepancies.
So the story goes, before the 2017 final, we were in Limerick for a training camp.
Yeah.
And the word must have gone around in the week leading up that Jim McGuinness had been down to sort of deliver a plan to the lads, that obviously on the back of them beating them in 2014. And I suppose the story of going that Jim had been in, he'd been with us for a few days. And I think maybe Martin Carney or somebody had been on the night before saying it on the last word, and David was in, and it was like, I'm telling you, this has happened, this happened. And I remember we were on the bus going up to the game, and our media guy sent me a text that says this story. He says, my phone is blowing up here. Everyone's on about it. So, you know, what do you want to do? And I'm sure, like, you know, there's no truth in it. Like, and I hadn't even met Jim McGuinness. I'd never spoken to the man before. And I've only met Jim once, which was above in Donegal, the Christmas before last. But I think when I think of that, about being on the bus and getting that text message, and when I do hear it at the start of the show at times, that does bring a little bit of a smirk to my face as well.
Did you then text Brady, because he was on the Saturday panel with Jared, did you then text Brady to say, actually, you've got that arseways? Is that how you texted him?
The our media guy texts him to say, I can categorically tell you. And then when you hear the bit, David comes in, sort of say, he goes from being North Pole to South Pole in the space of about a minute.
As only DB can.
But that's the great thing about DB as well. When he tells those stories, it's like, he could be in front of the Pope telling them, and you know, he could be back again in a minute. And but it's even now, you know, you have a good laugh about those stories, and it makes you sort of appreciate that when you're in the bubble and you're in the camp, the Barry tells you all the stuff that happens around. So like, I never heard that Jim McGuinness story happening, and it was the talk of the county, I believe, in the week.
Right.
But I never heard it, all right, until I got this text message, all right? So as Barry says, that's what will also deliver the belief that the group will have this week, that, hey, we can go toe-to-toe with this team, and we just go and look to control the things that are within our control.
Yeah, and maybe, I mean, I think I'm glad you've done that, because we should finish on a positive, because the fact is, I mean, bar Dublin, and I guess Kerry have won, you know, their fair share in the last while as well. But really, every other county should be jealous of Mayo fans. They're having the best time. I mean, it's the best ticket in town to be a Mayo fan. The Odysseys, the highs, the lows are still part of the, you know, like, geez, it's still only football at the end of the day. People are getting together with families and friends and having days that they wouldn't usually have. And yes, they're sad going home, but I mean, they've had an amazing week, and that is kind of part of the story. Like, Barry, what's your favourite day? I mean, it's hard to pick one, I'm sure. Maybe it's not even a match, because you talked about those days in Ackle training and everything. The favourite times as a Mayo player, because we're, and it's All-Ireland final week, so that's probably the reason, but I'm making it sound here like drudgery.
Yeah, no, like, I think the two Dublin lads covered it well as well. It's the night outs afterwards. It's the times where you're just sharing drinks and stuff. And I think, you know, Mayo fans are really, really lucky. And I suppose with this COVID, I was looking forward to sitting in the stand and going up the night before and having a couple of drinks and enjoying ourselves. We're very, very privileged. There's, you know, 30 other counties that want to be there this weekend where Dublin and Mayo are. But some of them, I think, will be coming home from the games just on the bus back. The one good thing about living in Mayo is, you need a lot of cans from Dublin to get back to Castlebar after a game, you know. So it takes 3 hours, and then with a bit of traffic, you add on an extra hour. And you think David Brady's stories are bad. Some of the others are worse. Like, but no, it's nights like that that, you know, looking back now, that you really, really enjoy. And, you know, I laugh about after actually the Tipperary game, Stephen, where I had to go back for work. Usually we'd stay up, so all the team would stay up. And there was a minibus going back for, I suppose, the two or three that couldn't stay up. And there was myself and Cullen Boyle in it and a couple of the medical team. And we went back and we got a couple of cans and we were driving down, got delayed in traffic. And by the time we hit coming into Strokestown, we were running out of cans. So we said to your man, we needed to stop and, you know, to go to the bathroom. And we stopped into some random bar in Strokestown, and it was full of half Mayo and half Roscommon people. And myself and Cullen Boyle went in. And now, bearing in mind, Cullen Boyle is, what, three or four All-Stars. And we went in and got talking to this fella, and he didn't recognise who we were. Thought we were genuine supporters coming back, and he was like, "Oh no, we're in trouble next in 2 weeks' time now. You know, the Dubs are going to beat us by 10 points, and you know, this kind of stuff." And not knowing who we are, and looking back, then they told him, and you know, we had a good laugh about it at the time. But it's stupid things like that to remember after games. You know,
and so, would you have nights out in Dublin after matches?
Yeah. Like after every game, it would be a night out in Dublin, and it's funny because like many a night, after winning a semi-final or a quarter-final, you'd be bumping into the likes of Paul and Bernard, who you'd on earlier. Like, literally, it could be in Coppers at 2 or 3 in the morning or wherever it was. And, you know, there'd be a bit of crack and a bit of banter, right, a few drinks, and 2 weeks later, you'd be going at it. So okay, I think that's the great thing about it.
So the rivalry, even at its height, you could see each other in Coppers and it was okay?
Yeah, it was fine, yeah. You know, you'd nod and smile and talk and go on again, and 2 weeks later, they'd be kicking each other around the pitch. But, you know, that goes with it. And afterwards, you know, it's, you know, as if nothing ever happened. And that's the great thing, I think, about it, you know.
And would you twist Rochford's arm and get him out to Coppers?
Yeah, well, actually, he'd be the one leading the posse, I think, you know.
Well, there. It took you all of 43 minutes to tell your first lie. that's a record. No, yeah. Don't. When you've got kids, you've got places to go. I didn't stay in Dublin the night of the Tipperary game either, but I had to drive down. So
right.
I couldn't even stop off with a couple of cans.
Yeah. Heaven forbid you got to Strokestown and said, "Grand, we'll just keep going home. Like, we absolutely have to stop and get more cans."
Yeah, well, the funny thing was that the stop was actually in Ballardreen. That was the first stop. We couldn't even wait 20 minutes. But anyway,
listen, great. So, Stephen, you're gonna head off. I know we're going to chat more about the match with Barry. So there are a billion talking points here ahead of this match. You know, geez, I'm as much as anything I was saying to Paul and Bernard, to see Desi Farrell really pushed probably to the pin of his collar. You know, that's a big day for him, trying to manage a game. You know how difficult that is in the heat of it all. So what's jumping out at you, that aside, with regards to Saturday. How do you see this game?
Yeah, look, I think there's a couple of things that sort of is feeding my optimism for them. Is one is that I think undoubtedly the boys will they have a familiarity playing Dublin, which I think allows them and the management not to get distracted by all the, like when you're preparing to take on Dublin, you're thinking, oh well, what will we do on the kickouts? What will you do in the match? Mm-hmm. You could get yourself going down to cul-de-sacs thinking there's so many things to do. And I think the familiarity with having played Dublin, the experience that they'll have played again with them, that they'll have a sense of calm around taking them on. I think there's confidence in the group. They won't fear taking Dublin on. They'll absolutely respect them. And I think all our friends in Dublin don't need to be posting that to some dressing room or something like that. There's a difference between fear and respect. And they won't fear, and they'll feel that they can match them up. And again, you know, whilst this is a different occasion in light of the environment we're in, you know, the vast majority of them have played in All-Ireland finals. And while some people might say, that might burden them, I think it's a sense of they'll embrace that. I think they'll make a battle out of it. And I think they'll drive at it. And I think they'll look to put themselves if they can put themselves into a winning position going down the home stretch, then, you know, maybe that luck they'll have earned will be on their side.
Because, and Barry, we'll get into it later on, but like if you take last year, Stephen, so the first half, a lot of good things happened. And then the 12 minutes after half time, what do Mayo do to interrupt that 12 minutes next time?
Yeah, but I think, you know, right, and there'll be people shouting at the radios now, but I think, you know, you have to look at that in a little bit more detail. Like Mayo had five or six attacks at that same time. They didn't kill the ball on three occasions, right? I think Paddy left one short on Stephen Cluckton's crossbar, and they end up getting the Conn O'Callaghan's first goal comes off that. I think, you know, it's absolutely, and this is spoken in probably every dressing room, that when you attack, and certainly against the Dubs and the quick counter-attack they have, is you got to kill the ball. Right. If Mayo had killed the ball in some of those situations, I think the opportunity to score the goals may have been thwarted a little bit. So, you know, in when you go and look at the 10 minutes after halftime, you're saying, oh, they were blown off the field. But there was that was a little bit closer. Mayo didn't execute. And I think, a lot of people are talking about, you know, the forward line seems to be a lot more cohesive this year than it was last year playing that way. Obviously, Tommy Conroy has come in and offered a bit of pace and has just added something different to what Aidan offers, probably with his physicality, and Killian's scoring form is really good. So I think, you know, yeah, there's things there that Mayo need to improve on in relation to. I don't think they can have those sort of easy turnovers in the Dublin half of the field, because that'll just put the defensive line under pressure. And I think, look, ultimately, I think that this could come down to the two benches. And, you know, Dublin have a really strong bench back to 16, 17 time of the artillery they have on their bench. And I think something that probably maybe people have sort of forgotten is that Mayo are missing three or four guys this at the moment that could be on the bench or could be offering something off. And Jason Doherty, Donald Vaughan and Brendan Harrison, all guys that are serious players. And unfortunately for Mayo, they don't have them. But that obviously gives up the opportunity to a Jordan Flynn or a Darren Cohn or a Michael Plunkett or whoever it is to come in and make a name for themselves. So look, they won't back from it. They have to make a battle of it, and I've no doubt they will, and I'm sure they're looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think we all are. Well, listen, Barry Moran's going to stick with us, and we're going to chat in a bit more depth about the match. Stephen Rochford, great to catch you up. Brilliant stuff. Thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it. Enjoy the game.
Thanks, Joe. We'll try.
So that was Barry Moran and Stephen Rochford. We're here with thanks to Super Value. Be sure to check out Super Value's YouTube channel to see their latest support from the sofa video series. Brings you into the homes of some crazy GA fans. I'm sure you've seen those little snippets in and out of the matches as they're watching their county. So that's all there on the Super Value YouTube page.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.